The power of social media helping to solve crimes in the spotlight today. An emotional appeal to find suspects in the recent murder of a North Shore woman led to two arrests thanks to social media posts. But can online vigilantism go too far? When does it cross the line as a help or a hindrance for law enforcement? This week, we sat down with cybercrimes investigator Chris Duque to find out.
Vigilante is like a strong word. It always brings back my childhood hero, Batman. You know, everybody says, you know, vigilante, you know, we're taking justice in our own hands. Reporting crime is not being a vigilante, you know. And for the kids, it's not tattletaling or ratting out your friends. You're reporting something, you know, somebody has been harmed or victimized in some way, and reporting it is not vigilante. Vigilantism, to me now, is that when I take it upon my own to be the judge, jury, and the executioner, you know, and rather than go to the legal process. To me, that is vigilantism. So, in light of, you know, social media, if somebody posts, say, you know, you post a photograph or an image or a posting, a video of somebody burglarizing your house. Now, I identify the person. I say, I know that's the guy. And now I'll take action on my own, find the guy, beat him up, find your stuff, return it to you. I'm, you know, judge, jury, and executioner. The problem I see is that what if, and it happens, has happened in the past, where the individual in the post, the so-called suspect, has been misidentified. Now what? And then this mob mentality, you know, they go out and take action on their own and, like I said, be the judge, jury, and executioner on the individual before law enforcement intervenes.
Right. We saw that with the Boston bombing when they misidentified a person of interest, and it went out everywhere, and then they had to retract it several hours later. Like, no, this is not the person. It was a mistake. So what do you do when you have a situation where someone is misidentified?
Well, you got to protect that guy or gal, you know, as much as possible. And right away, damage control, because that person's not only their, you know, their physical well-being is at risk, their family. And also their personal life, their professional life. If they're like their coworkers might look at them differently. And the thing is that one thing about the internet is unforgiving, and people and it never forgets. So maybe today we find out this person is wrongly being accused, been misidentified. Some of the users might not be up to speed on the current posts. And they still believe that this is who the real perpetrator is, not seeing that there is another post down below saying that, oh, we've wrongly accused this person. This guy has been misidentified, and we caught the correct individual. So
the damage is done.
The damage is done already. And, you know, I see that in this kind of scenario where, you know, we had the homicide. But I've seen similar things happening in this, among the kids. And that's why it's like the same thing. The kids would see a posting, believe it to be true, and then act on the posting based, you know, what the individual posted, and it's completely bogus. You know, I've had reports of so-called students accusing their teachers of inappropriate touching, which is completely bogus. And, you know, some teachers, one particular teacher almost lost their job, and the community was going after them. So,
and I imagine it would be difficult also for police if during their investigation of an actual crime, there's a problem that comes up with either misidentifying someone, and then the posse goes out and does their thing. And then it makes it more difficult for investigators because you're trying to sort out what's truth and what's not.
And then, you know, and what is it going to be admissible? You know, how was it, you know, the chain of custody of materials that's obtained, statements made, identification was made. How do you know that if you say this is Chris Duque, and well, how do you know that Chris Duque? You know, oh, I know it's Chris. Or it could be just misleading. Just want to get, he looks like Chris, so. But I mean, and a lot of people, what they do is that they're quick to react. And, you know, human nature, you want to be the first to post. You want the bragging rights. I'm the first one to post. So they'll quickly make a comment. And then, but once they made a comment, you know, I don't care how fast it is. It's posted. You delete. Somebody may have caught it, you know.
And we've got situations, I think, where, you know, folks will have their Facebook page hijacked by somebody else, and that creates a whole another problem.
That's quite common, and there is no defense to any kind of impersonation, whether be it online or offline. It's easier to do it online because of the fact that you can get a lot of resources by, you know, you can look at the particular individual's, say your target's Facebook page or Instagram profile or their LinkedIn account. And from there, just garner some personal information, go on Google, grab a recent photograph of the individual, create a email from maybe Gmail or Yahoo, open an account, post the pictures, and right there you got that individual's profile. And people believe that because the basic information appears to be true and probably is true. And people believe, oh, that must be Kathy, that must be Chris, you know, it must be Amber, so because there's a photograph and they say they work for so and so company and that's the profile. But that's all public.
How has the whole social media thing helped investigators when people do post, either like you said, whether it's a Facebook page like Stolen Stuff where they show surveillance video of someone breaking into a home, you know, how has it helped investigators in solving these cases?
Well, it's good for identification, and it helps when the detective or the investigator goes to a site and, you know, and they suspect where the item is being sold or resold or pawned. And they can positively identify and say, oh, it belongs to this particular individual because based on the post. But again, too, we have to verify that the poster actually owns the item. And he's not just saying that they own the item. So it helps provide leads for us. Again, too, as an investigator, I would prune the information and I'll verify it with other traditional means of investigation or other sources to validate, okay, this is what happened. The house is actually in Makakilo and not in Manoa, you know, and so forth. And then with the videos, to see, if I have a video and you post a video, for me personally, I would, as an investigator, I would contact you to get the original video, to get the full unedited, because you may only post a clip of it. Maybe there might be information before and after the clip. So we want to retain that. I mean, just using the Facebook video alone, rather than for us to obtain it, we would have to get a court order to Facebook to get a copy of it. So
go to the source.
Yeah. So best evidence would be the source, would be the person who posted it. So we identify the Facebook user, contact them. Could we get copies of the original video and look at the feed?
Because this murder on the North Shore that we just saw recently, and that case is still working its way through the courts, but still early on, is there any message out there that we should be, you know, it should be top of mind as far as, like, caution? We did have a situation where, you know, the tips did lead law enforcement.
That was good.
To the suspects
quickly.
Good. But what if there was a case of mistaken identity?
And that's the downside. When I strongly advise the public and the users and the viewers that when they see the post, if they have something positive to add, like they can positively know who the person is or they think who the person is, things that will help or assist the investigation to identifying the perpetrators and maybe some evidence like weapons and so forth, put that up, okay? But don't add the other type of comments that are not going to produce anything except negative vibes. For instance, like if they make racial slurs, if they see a video and they make racial slurs that a guy is, you know, particular race or whatever, or they're dropping F-bombs, or say that guy should be done to this, they should be killed or hurt. Now, that stuff don't help the investigation. All it does is add fuel to the fire and incites the mob mentality. I mean, stay away from that. We don't, as a law enforcement, if I see one positive lead and 200 just all these other comments not related, I mean, not going to help me. I have to go through all that. So if you do going to respond, just to, you know, like I said, think what you're posting and just be positive about something that's going to help the investigation, not about these your opinions or comments about the particular individual.
Right. You don't want to incite a riot.
Yeah, you don't want to incite a riot.
Chris Duque is an investigator with the Honolulu Prosecutor's Office who specializes in cyber crimes. He formerly headed the Honolulu Police Department's White Collar Crimes Unit.